B-Pod Studios.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Well, I thought to myself, why not start out this rain-soaked, dreary week here in late October with another podcast, and that's exactly what we're going to do right here on Talkin' Rock. Thanks so much for tuning by and downloading and following the podcast. I do appreciate it. Jay Buchanan from Rival Sons is my guest today, as you are well aware of if you read the headline of the podcast. And lots of things have happened with this band recently, including some tour cancellations. We talk about the new music and how far along they are into it, which I was kind of surprised to hear. And we talk about a bunch more today with Jay. It's so cool to connect with him. He's like, he reminds me a little bit of Brent Smith from Shinedown. I mean, obviously two different kind of bands, but just a real organic, just a talented singer and a guy that can really just sing a lot of different things. But the band is so cool, and they've been around for quite a while now, celebrating the 10-year anniversary of their record, Pressure and Time, on this upcoming tour. So they've been doing a lot of stuff as far as that's concerned. We talk about their coffee brand. We talk about his new son. Yeah, that's right. He's a father to a new little boy named Mojave. We talk about that. Oh, and by the way, if you follow him on Instagram, Facebook and whatnot, yes, he's got the blonde hair working now. So I had to ask him about that as well. But Jay's a pretty good guy. And like I said, a super talent. So it was really cool to connect with him. Today on Talkin' Rock, I just asked him, you know, what's going on in your guys' world?
Oh, let's see. The last year and a half, 20 months or so, we had a thing called the pandemic happen. And so everything went to a grinding halt for us. You know, the 2019 was like our hugest year yet in our career, and then everything just kind of got caught in that spider web. And now we are back on the road. Now we're back on the road, and we're trying to finish up this new record, this next record for Atlantic, and just back to it, and happy to see everybody now.
All right, we'll
be back on stage doing our thing.
We'll talk about some of those things just mentioned here coming up in just a minute. But correct me if I'm wrong, did you have a son in the last couple of years too?
I sure did. I had a son just last year.
Just last year. So I was thinking about that. So, I mean, even though obviously the pandemic, you know, was kind of a bummer for a lot of people, that probably gave you a little bit of time to kind of be a dad for a little while and forget about, you know, the touring and all that kind of stuff, right?
Well, there are, I mean, less. When it all comes down to it, like, I am an extremely privileged person. I do what I love for a living. And the casualty of that, you know, the price that I pay, is I'm not with my family as much as I would like to be. But last year, having a baby, I was there to be with my wife for, you know, for the whole pregnancy and then the whole almost first year of his life. It's like that's worth more than anything, because in what bizarre universe would I have been able to do that? Because given the choice, I will always go to work. I'll always tour. I'll always work. But since that choice was taken away from me, it gave me that opportunity to really be there after all of these years. And that's priceless, man.
Yeah. A lot of bands I talk to, it's like this double-edged bit. It's like a bitter sword, a double-edged sword, a bitter pill, whatever you want to call it. And it's like, they love doing what they're doing, but it also gives them a little bit of time to back up and kind of, do the family thing and do different things and not be so cyclical like they've been throughout their entire career.
That's absolutely right. You know, when for a touring musician, it's really Groundhog Day, and I'm sure you've heard other people use that term.
Yeah.
It's Groundhog Day because you're doing the same thing. You're doing a slightly different version of the exact same thing every single day. And to have the whole script flipped, it's like it's an extremely healthy thing. In recalibrating your gratitude, that's for sure.
Yeah. So when does the blonde hair come about?
I think for me, man, you know, I was just looking for something different.
Yeah,
I like to change my look up. I like to completely change my look up every year and a half or so. And then it was just time to just try that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just looking to do something completely different. And, you know, from having really long hair and going the full hippie, you know, rock and roll archetype to going short hair and being high and tight, wearing suits, like just all this different stuff. I got to entertain myself and I got to shed my, I have to continuously shed my skin. So I don't feel like I'm gathering too much moss.
I hear you. Yeah. And you are quite a snappy dresser. I'll give you that. You do have some pretty cool outfits.
Well, I appreciate that.
As opposed to my jeans and t-shirts I wear all the time. But, yeah,
hey, man, I'm wearing jeans and a t-shirt right now.
Right.
But,
yeah.
You know, there's a time for everything.
That's right. So I messaged Miley. I'm like, dude, what should I talk to Jay about? He's like, talk to him about sandwiches and coffee. So you got this sleepwalker and open my eyes coffee. Now, are you yourself a coffee drinker?
Oh, I'm a huge coffee drinker.
Okay.
Yeah, I would definitely. I went through and had to hand pick, and I oversaw the entire coffee operation. And from designing the packaging and designing the labels to picking out the exact roast and the origin and everything. So that was definitely my baby. Yeah, huge coffee drinker, man. Coffee is one of the greatest delights, I think, in life.
Yeah, because I'm not much of a, I don't know, I tried to get into coffee before, but I don't know, it stains my teeth, so I try not to drink too much of it. I thought that Dave was like the coffee aficionado of the band, no?
No.
Dave
is not. I think somewhere there was some article written.
That's what I saw, yeah. I'm looking at it right now. It says he's a bit of a connoisseur, it says right here.
No, not at all. Dave does not drink coffee. He doesn't do caffeine at all. I'm the lifelong coffee drinker. I don't know how that happened. And, I mean, for us, we just laugh about it, you know.
I mean, what are you going to do?
How could that be gotten...
Yeah.
Exactly. You just laugh it off.
Yeah, man.
The coffee is great. We've got two different blends, and it's the Open My Eyes blend. That's an Ethiopian bean, and the roast is just incredible. It's one of the better coffees I think I've ever had in my life.
And now you guys sell this at the merch booth and all this stuff on the tour.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We sell them online. We sell them at the merch booth. So that's a new one, to have bags of coffee out on the road.
I was just thinking that. Yeah, you're signing coffee bags now, probably, right?
Yeah, actually, well, because of right now, we're not signing much. And, you know, touring now, it's just so different.
Right.
It's such a different thing. Interacting with people, like, no, that's just, none of that's happening. Because we're having to try to bubble as much as possible. You know, we had some people get sick in our camp, and so we had to shut down for, you know, we lost Miley, and then more people tested positive. So we had to freeze the entire tour for another 2 weeks.
Right.
Now we're just reanimating.
Right. Yeah. When Miley tested positive, and you guys got the one of the techs to play, right? How many shows did you do with him?
We did three shows with our tech, Ben Bowers. And this was really one of those, it was like something out of a movie, you know, because we find out we're down in Austin, Texas. We find out that Miley tested positive that morning, like, okay, what are we going to do? And right away, we have two different drummers. Our drum tech, who was filling in, for our regular drum tech who got stuck in the Netherlands, he couldn't get access to the United States. And so our longtime drum tech and stage manager, Motown, couldn't make it. And so we used our buddy, Aaron Goodrich. And so he's been Miley's tech just for this U.S. tour. Well, our guitar tech, Ben Bowers, who's from London, he's been a rock drummer for years, and immediately he looked at it and he said, I can do this. Wow. That's a drummer who's heard every show that we've done over the last, you know, 4 years. And he stepped in there and he did so well. And the tour is really, it's still alive, you know, thanks to his hard work and his skill. But he stepped up and it made the show happen.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I saw you guys posting some stuff about that about a month ago or so, whenever that was. You know, it's you know, I've talked to a lot of musicians about this over the past 6 months or whatever. But so your life, like we were just talking about, is kind of cyclical. You put out a record, you tour, that kind of thing. So all of a sudden you got to stop, you know, doing what you're doing. What is it like the first time you get back on stage after, you know, not knowing when you were going to get back on stage?
Well, I think that there are a couple of different factors here. When the stage is taken away from you, and you know, we had done a few things in this last year where we were together. You know, we did this these live performances, these live streams from Catalina Island out here in California, and so we did those, and then we also played the Ride Festival that we headlined out in Telluride, Colorado. But, you know, we only played four shows total at that festival, and then I played a solo show. Like, well, that's fun, and we had the opportunity to be together. Those one-offs and those, like, limited engagements, that's very, very different from actually being on the bus, out on the road, and in the field.
Yeah.
And I think for us, getting started, I think that there's an element of like shaking the dust off and getting back into gear. I mean, it was as natural as anything else, really, because we've done this for so long and we tour so much that pretty much it was just like slipping into a warm bath in a way. And I think that there was also a revived appreciation for just about every element of touring, from being together to looking out at the audience and feeling that gratitude and feeling the good fortune that we are able to live because of this job.
Yeah, I think the last outdoor concert I saw was you guys at Stone Temple Pilots before. That was, and then obviously, you know, the last outdoor show I say is here because, you know, we shut things down about now. And this was at the end of September in 2019. And then, of course, we had nothing last year. And, I mean, that show was so good, and that tour was so good. I mean, I just talked to Jeff Goot, you know, last week, and he says that might have been one of their last shows that they actually did. But, yeah, these guys, like you say, a brand-new appreciation. It's like, even as a fan, I went to that Metallica drive-in thing, and I didn't realize it was going to hit me so hard, but it's like, it kind of reminded me that, you know, being at these concerts is just kind of hanging out with people that you share a common interest in a certain thing with, that, you know, that you brings you together, and you kind of miss that feeling for a long time.
I think, yeah, there's no doubt about that. And I think that throughout 2020, you know, we really wanted to do we wanted to do a live stream thing, or we wanted to do some drive-in shows, and the fan base was really reaching out for us to do something like that. But I think that for us, we had the conundrum of, you know, we wanted the audience experience to be as good as it could be. You know, so finally, after shopping around and finding the right production team, we were able to do the two shows from Catalina, but the production level was very high. And, you know, from the camera work to the audio, we had it engineered by, you know, one of our favorite engineers, Mark Rains, and mastered by Pete Lyman over at Infrasonic, and our usual team of people that we go through. But we were apprehensive to set something up before it was just right, because we didn't want, you know, in order to make something like that happen, it was going to be very expensive. And so who absorbs that cost? Well, the fans do. You know, they end up paying this really high premium for a subpar experience. And I had that feeling like, man, I don't want to get together like people being in their cars. And while that's better than nothing, it was like, it's like going to see someone you love while they're in jail. You can't give them a hug.
Yeah.
And you know, there's this thick glass between you, and you want to get that communication, any communication that you can. But then there's also a heartbreak involved. Like, ooh, this is so far from the actual experience. And so we chose to wait it out until we could find like a proper channel, the way that we did with our Catalina performances.
Yeah. And by the way, I'll take your word for it with visiting someone in jail, because I never had to do that. So.
Yeah.
But I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
So a few minutes ago, you just mentioned new music. Now, I've been, you know, Feral Roots to me, I mean, that record is so good. I was just listening to it again the other day. That record's outstanding. How do you top that record?
I don't know. We're working on it.
Yeah.
I think that when it really comes down to it, man, like, each record that you make, that's like the family photo or snapshot of who the band is,
right,
and who we are creatively. So in terms of topping it, I think that, like, I know for me, I definitely don't look at it in terms of topping. I think that you want to go deeper into purveying your own style. If you can, you want to go deeper, you know, closer to the source. And I think that artistically you're charged with that responsibility of trying to be as honest as possible, you know, and not, you know, as we get further into our career and catalog, I think that by making a record that we felt proud of, I think that you're charged with that responsibility of not going after the low hanging fruit creatively and pushing yourself to make a unique statement, you know, a statement that's going to be unique to your own vocabulary as an artist, and then hopefully within the vernacular of the genre, that it can be a unique statement as well. So I think that it's really about, like, it's going deeper into the mine and trying to find the larger vein of gold, you know, like the real, just trying to get closer to the source. And so, in terms of like one-upping yourself, you know, it's always relative, because you're growing artistically and the band is growing. We're not the same people we were 2 years ago. And when we made Feral Roots, we weren't the same band that made the Hollow Bones record. But it's this successive, you know, left turns and right turns and sharp U-turns that we've made throughout our career that enable us to have that, I don't know, the instinct, you know, to just turn on a dime and to stay true to ourselves and not be afraid to make the decisions, sometimes even when they're hard ones, but to make those hard decisions in order to try to salvage any artistic integrity that we can.
Yeah. I guess I kind of miss, I didn't word it properly, but I was looking back on this. It's like, you know, the 10th anniversary of Pressure and Time, you know, you guys are redoing that deluxe edition and whatnot, but I guess that by with Feral Roots, what I was trying to get at, and I know it's exactly what you're saying, but like each record, you guys just get bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's like this slow slog. And it's like, you guys have kind of, you know, built your success over each record getting bigger and bigger and bigger, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we've tried.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, it's a twofold thing. You have your audience, and really for us, the audience comes second. We come first.
Right.
When we're making these records, like, we have to entertain and impress each other and try to go down paths that we've never gone down before, you know, with writing, with tones, with riffs, with arrangements, like, and, you know, you got to do those things so that you know that you're coming by it honestly. And then by the time it gets to the audience, you never know. You never know what however the audience is going to react to it. That's completely out of our control. But, you know, we have, it starts with us trying to impress each other, you know, and knock each other out over it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you know, I got in my notes jotted down right here, you know, talk about the growth of the band since that record 10 years ago. But like you said, it's like every couple of years you guys are, you know, shedding your skin, doing new things. And I mean, you guys are a million miles traveled and thousands of shows played since that record.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was, I can tell you that for us, with the 10th anniversary of the Pressure and Time record, diving back in and playing this album in its entirety on this tour. Initially, when we dove back in, it's like, okay, we're going to play this one front to back. It's listening to who you were 10 years ago, just for us as a band. You know, we're comprised of a lot of different personalities, and we've been through so much together. And I don't think that we talk about it too much, or that we focus too much on it, about all of the ground that we've covered in between now and then. But going back and putting on this old outfit that fit, you know, or this tailored suit that fit the band 10 years ago, going back in and putting that back on and you know, and playing that music through the lens of who we are today. It was really something. It felt a little bit like a little bit of a time machine, because, you know, for me, I'm singing these lyrics that I wrote way back then. And, you know, there are certain lyrics where I go, oh, wow, okay, that was interesting that I wrote that. And then other ones go like, yeah, that's definitely me. That's still me right there. But it's great to go back and revisit that. And I think that being forced to do that, or forcing ourselves to do that, I think that at the same time, it was a tandem benefit, because it gave us also an appreciation for the ground that we have covered and what we actually have achieved together, and how many miles we have gone, and the, you know, all the records and the way that our artistic voice as a group has changed. And I think that going back and, you know, doing this record now makes that stark contrast very real.
Now, you know, last year when everything was locked down and stuff, did you have time to reflect on how far you've gone in your career? Because I know that when you're kind of in the bubble, you're probably not thinking much about that. But when you're out of it, do you sit back and reflect on your career and the strides that you've made?
Yes, I think for me, it's always been like, I'm not one to be nostalgic for the most part. Like, if you come over to my house, I don't have Rival Sons posters or awards frames, that's just not my style, you know? And, I always like to look forward. And, but I think that not being able to tour, and then really putting both feet, you know, planting them firmly in the home and being there with your family and completely switching gears, not having a tour looming where there's always this clock counting down when it's going to be time for you to leave again. Not having that was something entirely new. And I think that more than anything, it's the appreciation for the great life that we're afforded through this art. I think that was the real takeaway from that lockdown time. In terms of what we've achieved, I think all of us being together again and being out on the road and experiencing these things and being back, you know, back on stage together, I think more than anything, it's just a new appreciation and a gratitude. But in terms of thinking about, you know, laying too heavy on everything we've accomplished, I think that we're still very much, more than ever, actually, we're hungrier than ever. You know, we're working on this record and really taking our time to make this next statement and to make this new batch of songs that we're going to be, you know, at some point next year, we'll be out here performing those songs every night and have a new, just a completely new take on the entire thing. We're very much forward minded.
And how far into the process of the new stuff do you think you are?
I'd put us right about three quarters.
Really? Okay.
Somewhere around there. Yeah, yeah, somewhere around there. Got a great great collection. I think that we're framing it together and, you know, still doing some writing, and then we'll go back in and finish things up. But we're working on it.
Now, I'm not obviously not in a band or anything, but when you guys are out on tour and stuff, you know, do you guys sound check with some of these new songs? You guys kick around these ideas back, you know, backstage before the shows or on the bus or whatever?
For the most part, I think the band's always been really good about partitioning our present from our future, from our past. I think that until the record comes out, until it's mastered, until it's done, I think that we typically look at it like it's not done until it's done.
Okay.
And so we don't, you know, it's like looking at it and like letting anything out of the bag, or like really living that identity. When it's time to do that, we will. But as of now, like it's all on the editing room floor right now. You know, it's all raw footage until we can sign off on it and say like, okay, we're ready for this to be out there in the world.
Well, I, for one, cannot wait for another Rival Sons record. Jay, really appreciate your time. Looking forward to hearing some new stuff. Of course, looking forward to seeing you guys here in a few days in the Motor City. And congratulations on the birth of your son. And, man, I'll tell you what, it's good to have rock and roll back in on the stage again, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, we can't wait to be back there with you guys on the 27th. And I want to thank everybody out there for rolling with the punches with us. Rescheduling, like all of this stuff, this is a time of great variability, and we're doing the very best that we can to keep this tour afloat. So I really appreciate everyone's support and understanding, and means the world to us. We can't wait to be there in Detroit playing with you guys.
And there you have it, Jay Buchanan from Rival Sons. Jay is one of these guys who's like super thoughtful. He thinks about exactly what he's going to say. He's very meaningful in what he says as well. And like I said before at the top of the podcast, just a great talent. So got to thank him for checking in. Hey, later on in this week, I've got a pretty cool podcast lined up. We're going to veer off of the rock path just a little bit with a pretty popular comedian. We'll talk about that. And also, let's see, how can I phrase this? I don't like to jinx myself whenever I'm whenever I have these interviews coming up, because it's like whenever I say who's coming up on the show, then something happens and they can't come on or whatever the case is. Let's just say a singer who's joining a new band, an established band. So we'll just leave it at that, and that's gonna be posted probably on Thursday, so looking forward to that. And who knows what could happen in between now and then. It's a crazy world I live in, and sometimes things pop up and you're like, okay, cool, let's just roll with the punches and go with the flow and get this done as well. So in the meantime, thanks so much for following and listening, and hit me up on social media. You can always email me as well, meltdown@wrif.com. And I'm going to leave the big guy here with the big voice to close out the show.
Thank you for listening to Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. You can help this podcast grow by giving it a 5-star rating and writing a review on Apple and iTunes. Plus, feel free to subscribe and share it with your friends. Until next time, thanks for listening to Talkin' Rock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.